We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
Hey there, people. Great show today where we're going to get deep inside the alien abduction phenomenon. But before the show starts, I just want to tell you once again about ParanoiaCon. It is this weekend. My buddy Ron Patton has put together the event himself. I'm trying to do all I can to make it a success. I'll be there recording tidbits both days. If you want to come out and say hey to me and the THC audience, that would be sick. On Saturday, July 20th, the roster has both Andy Coven talking about the Mothman and other anomalous creatures, and Adam Gorightly presenting Tales of Conspiracy and High Weirdness. And then on Sunday, Olaf Phillips kicks off the day talking about secret space programs. And there's also several other pretty interesting looking presentations as well. It goes from 11 to 7 both days at Cafe Sabaca in San Diego. It's going to be dominant. I hope to see some people there. On top of that, check out the work of Plaid Klaus at mindcomics.com. There's also a banner on the THC website that you can click, but they focus on stories that evolve the mind from conspiracy theories, science fiction, and crazy psychedelic exploration. Their newest title, Off Grid, is about civil war between a surveillance state's enslaving government and a resistance group of ex-military and anonymous hackers fighting for survival off grid. It's damn well written. It's damn well illustrated. It's a great comic. And I think the first issue might even be free now. So go to mindcomics.com. People, explore the outer reaches of your mind. Mindcomics.com. Both these guys are helping keep THC above water, so let's help them out as well. All right, let's get this party started. Boom.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Welcome to THC, everybody. Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. In sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and we have a super exciting topic for you today. I'm sure we've all heard about the strange phenomenon known as the alien abduction, and with varying degrees of skepticism, many of us have heard the cliff notes to these stories or seen the representation of them in Hollywood films, but most of us probably haven't dug too deeply into this realm, which is not the case for today's two guests. We have Kathleen Martin, who is the International MUFON Director of Abduction Research, who's been investigating alien abductions and UFOs for more than 23 years. She's also the niece of the famed Betty and Barney Hill, who are probably the most well-known experiencers of alien abduction. Also along for the ride, we have Denise Stoner, which is probably the most appropriate name for a Higher Side Chats guest to date. She's also spent over two decades researching the phenomenon herself and has some pretty compelling personal experiences as well. Together, they're responsible for the Martin Stoner Commonalities Among Abduction Experiences study, as well as their new book, The Alien Abduction Files, the most startling cases of human-alien contact ever reported. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Hello.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. We cover a lot of fringe topics on THC, but we've had several guests come on and talk about UFOs and the technology involved. A man you're familiar with, Stan Friedman. But we haven't really dug into the alien abduction side of things. So I'm really psyched about this. I've always loved hearing about these cases. But, you know, one thing that always kind of has nagged me is the sort of basis for a lot of this information is recalled through hypnosis. And hypnosis itself, I'm a little sketchy on. I mean, I've seen in a lot of comedy clubs used as a cheap trick to get people to do embarrassing stuff for the crowd. And to me, since a lot of this information comes from repressed memories, it's important to talk about hypnosis itself. I mean, from the book, I know, Kathleen, you have a lot of experience in hypnotherapy. Can you kind of demystify hypnotism a bit? Help me believe that it's a credible way of collecting information?
Well, first of all, let me state that on the Marden-Stoner study, 88% of the 50 experiencers who participated in this study stated that their, at least some of their abduction memories were consciously recalled, and 67% stated that they had a conscious recollection, not with hypnosis, of the observation of an unconventional craft at less than 1,000 feet prior to an abduction. So that should dispel the myth that all of this is revealed through hypnosis. And you are correct that hypnosis is fallible, that it is possible to confabulate information under hypnosis, particularly if you have a lot of knowledge about this and you have a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist who is asking leading questions, and you know, you might create a story that isn't true. At the same time, it is possible to get very good and very accurate information through hypnosis, particularly when you use a technique called forensic hypnosis, which when hypnosis was permissible in a court of law, it is no longer, but when it was the only type of hypnosis that was admissible because you do not ask leading questions at all. And that's the type of hypnosis that I like to use when I do it. I also have therapeutic techniques. I will try to lead someone to confabulate something just to see if it's possible. Mm-hmm. And that will, as a marker, so that will give me information about whether or not the story that I'm receiving is in fact true. And I will warn the witness that I want them to give me only information that was real and that was true. And, you know, so that's really important. I also have information, and Denise has this as well because she too is a hypnotist, but we have information that most people don't know about it. It is only the leading people in the field who work with experiencers who have this information. So if we hear this secret information, we will know that we have what is probably a real alien abduction.
That's super interesting. I mean, in the book, you do have an example that really struck a chord with me where something like 27 kids were kidnapped and killed off a bus, and the bus driver...
They weren't killed. They were not killed. No.
They were just kidnapped?
27 students were on a bus. And were kidnapped and buried alive. The driver escaped and led the kids to the children, who were released to their parents. So the kids survived this.
Wow.
And the bus driver underwent forensic hypnosis and remembered the license plate of the kidnapper's van. And this led to the arrest and successful prosecution of the criminals. So you can see that it can be used to solve a crime.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty validating evidence to me. I thought that was a really interesting anecdote. Well, all right, ladies, let's just dive into the deep end a bit. I mean, the things that you've done that I really like is you've gathered information and surveyed experiences to look for, like, the similarities among them, which I think helps to make them seem more credible. If they're consistent with other people's experience, then they fit inside the box. But it also helps create a narrative or an outline to the phenomenon that seems to have, like, really very little consistent detailed information, at least in the mainstream. But I think that's great that you've taken that approach. You know, Denise, let's start by talking about your experience, maybe the one that starts the book off with your husband on the Colorado road trip. That's pretty fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. We didn't expect anything like that to happen. And what occurred was something we had done all the time, weekend after weekend, for years. We had a beautiful spot up on the Arkansas River in Colorado, and this August of 1982 evening, we had planned to leave by 5 p.m., and that we did. My parents had come from Colorado Springs. They were waiting for us with a longtime family friend, and we left from Denver area, the town of Arvada, and we had the car packed. We liked to reach an area called Kenosha Pass, because that was then a trip across a glacier valley called South Park Valley. And we stopped to stretch our legs and knew that we had it pretty easy from there, no traffic, and we were still going to be in sunlight. So we reached Kenosha Pass, got out, stretched our legs. When we got back in the car, I could see a little town called Jefferson at the base of Kenosha Pass. So when we hit the valley floor, we would notice immediately that we would see that little town sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look over and I saw two lights out across the desert. And in Colorado, you can see forever. So I was looking out across the desert, and I saw two lights, and I couldn't tell if they were real, if there was some sort of strange reflection, anomaly. I wasn't sure, but I didn't mention them because there are odd things in the desert anyway, a lot of the time. So my husband and I were talking all different kinds of topics and just really enjoying ourselves, looking forward to the weekend. And we hit Jefferson and had reached the bottom of the pass. And as we crossed through the little town, about 4 miles past that, those lights came across the desert as if they were going to meet the car, which they did. Went over the top of it. And I was trying to see what was above us, and I could not. All I could see was actually the two lights. And could not see an object attached to it. So I became a little bit concerned, greatly concerned. And I looked briefly to either side of the road, which had rows of large snow barriers. They were wooden. In the wintertime at night, it would stop snow from blowing across the road so cars wouldn't get in accidents. Also, at certain times of the year, great big tumbleweeds would blow across the road, and it would prevent those from blowing across also and capture them.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to my husband, there's something above the car. What's going on? What is this? Those lights have caught us. And I looked at him, and he wasn't moving. He was staring straight ahead. His hands were on the wheel, but he wasn't steering the car. Nothing was going on, and it was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, we're going to get in a wreck. And right then, the wheels on that side of the car, on the driver's side of the car, just started to move and scrape, and you could hear them scraping on the road because the whole car was going sideways and starting to go towards those snow barriers. And I was wide awake, I knew, and it was the sun was out, and we lifted then above those barriers just prior to hitting them. Those lights were still above the car, and we went out fairly rapidly across the desert. There were no cars on the road because in the middle of that valley, there weren't any. There was nothing there, maybe one ranch house after Jefferson at the far end of it. And my husband had set the odometer because it was a fairly new car and we felt like we weren't getting good gas mileage. So he had set the odometer. And I felt the car after we had gone quite a long ways out into the desert. Felt the car coming to the floor of the desert, and I was looking around, and I still just saw the two lights. And the next thing I knew, we were all the way across the desert, although it took me a minute to realize that, and we were on the top of a place called Trout Creek Pass. I looked at my husband. He had come to. He was fidgety and restless and nervous and panicky, and I was scared. And I said, what the heck just happened and what's going on? Our daughter was asleep in the back seat, had been all the way across. And I looked behind us. It was now pitch dark. Instead of being 8 o'clock in the evening or just before, it was 11 o'clock.
Man.
And here we are. The headlights are on. We didn't turn them on. And my husband said, let's pull over a minute. Let's pull over and see what's going on. So he did. And we looked around, and it was cold. It was freezing cold because at night the temperature could drop from a summer heat and then in the desert get quite cold.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, your parents are waiting for us. We better get going. And so he did, pulled back on the road, and we headed another 7 to 9 miles down the road to a town called Buena Vista. And just outside that, we would turn into the ranch where our little mobile home was. And as we pulled in, my parents and our friend had been walking down the dirt road from their trailer to the ranch house. They were going to wake up the caretaker and ask to use the only phone because we didn't have cell phones.
Right.
And they wouldn't have worked up there anyway. So they were walking. We pulled up to them. They saw our headlights coming down the road. And we rolled the window down. And my dad said, where have you been? We were getting really, really worried. And both of us looked at my dad and said, we don't know. Well, my dad and his friend, our friend, both worked at a place called Command Sciences. They had also worked at Aerojet in California, and they were scientific-minded individuals working in aerospace. So after they asked us a couple of times to think about it, try to figure it out, they dropped it because they just knew that if we had something we needed to keep to ourselves, that was the end of it. And he wouldn't bother to press. My mom had to know. She was a mom and no secrets. She was going to figure out what we were up to. She kept asking and asking, you have to know. And I need to know. I have a need to know, she said. Where has my daughter been and my son-in-law? And she kept it up. We couldn't answer. And then I began to have dreams of giant eyes and odd-shaped heads and procedures that had possibly been done. And it was just getting very frightening. So that's basically the story.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty wild. And was it not until the hypnosis sessions that you started to recall some of the things that happened in those 3 hours?
Well, I had recalled some of it because of the faces and the figures and the entities, and we had checked the odometer, and as soon as we started to leave Trout Creek Pass, it started to work again. It did not work once we left that valley floor, so it showed that something had happened, that odometer had not moved from Kenosha Pass. It should have moved and operated all the way to Trout Creek. So did the car not move? Was it lifted all the way and set back across the valley? We don't know. So, yes, I had a friend, Dr. Bob Romack, and I had been working with him as a volunteer to be hypnotized to work on people with chronic pain and how could that be controlled without drugs. And we found out we had a mutual interest in things like UFOs. So when I talked to him about it, he said, all right, let's see if we can put this puzzle together. So I actually learned his hypnosis techniques. And over a period of 5 years, we had put my puzzle pieces together. And we had them at the time all recorded. He had started to write a book, and then I moved to Florida. I stayed in touch with him, but one day his wife called me, and he had dropped dead on the kitchen floor of a massive heart attack.
Oh.
And then he had had 6 children, all boys. They passed away before him, oddly enough. And then when I went to see if I could somehow acquire some of those tapes that we had done. His wife had passed away too. There's no family left.
So then did you just restart these sessions with Kathleen?
Yes, and I had lost some of my memory over that period of time, and other things had occurred. We had been taken here in Florida. Things had stirred up again, and I, in the interim, had met Kathleen and decided, well, I wonder what she'd think if I told her. So you can ask her about it, see what she says from there.
Yeah, Kathleen, the parts of the book I found most fascinating were the reports, the back and forth dialogue during the hypnosis sessions. I mean, can you walk us through some of the stuff that came out during those?
Yes, I can. I hypnotized Denise, and she had amnesia for the sessions. And I also asked her husband if I might be able to hypnotize him as well. I really wanted to know if this was a shared experience or if Denise had recalled something that might have been a fantasy under hypnosis. And I found out that it was a shared experience. But briefly to tell you what happened to Denise, after the car was moved across the valley floor, and not to Trout Creek, the first location that it was deposited on, after it was picked up 4 miles south of Jefferson, Colorado, Denise was taken out of the vehicle. There was a craft waiting overhead. Her escort, this is the ET who took her onto the craft, was there. And she sort of walked into a substance of sorts, and her body was drawn up through the bottom of this craft, and she felt as if it were breaking apart, and she did experience some pain. I had to desensitize her to the pain she was experiencing at that point. And then she found herself standing in a dimly lit hallway. And in that hallway, she was again with her escort, and she observed what she called soldiers. These were 3 foot tall alien beings, the Greys, the stereotypical little Greys, mm-hmm. who we know are responsible for guarding anyone who goes onto that craft, acting as assistants and making sure that they don't leave the craft with anything that doesn't belong to them. Denise was then taken down the hallway past these little Greys by her escort to an examining room. And when she arrived there, she saw an individual waiting for her. And this was the doctor. And she was greatly frightened by him. She said, no way, I am not doing this. She actually had at that point had to go to her safe place, and I always establish a safe place for a person to go to if they become fearful. And so Denise made the decision that she did not want to continue with the session at that point. And we worked together just talking to each other about this for, you know, for her to overcome the fear for several weeks, and then she was ready to resume. And what was so frightening was the doctor was insectoid looking. He was about 5 to 6 feet tall, very, very slender limbs and body, eyes that were vertically placed on his head that would open and close with a thin membrane on each side. So he was pretty horrific looking.
Yeah.
But Denise did recognize him at that point and was taken into the examining room, placed upon a table. What she believes was an implant was inserted into her foot. This was on the end of a long wire and up her leg. She received the telepathic message that this device was there, that it was different than the simple tracking device, because this device could communicate to her and control her behavior. So she did not like the idea of this whatsoever.
Yeah.
Then a needle was produced, a long needle that had a hollow center, she said, and it was inserted into her abdomen. And we know now that this is in order to extract ova for reproductive experiments that they are doing with humans. And this has been reported hundreds of times by others as well, independently. They also placed something into her eye, opened her eye up and placed something into it. She was shown something on a screen. It looked like a dead brown planet. She didn't know if this was the Earth in the future, or if this is where they came from, or what it was all about. And then she was taken on a tour of the craft. She was asked if she would like to see the craft's central core. And she was very interested in this because her father worked for the aerospace industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went with this insectoid being down to the central core. And I would really like for Denise to tell this part because she tells it so well. She's the one who experienced this.
Sure. Yeah, Denise, let us know. That part of the book seemed really, it was hard for me to visualize exactly what was being explained there, but I'll let you take a crack at it.
It affects me even now when I think about it, because I could feel what this central core was all about. They asked if I wanted to see it, and I said yes. Because the fear is removed when you're on the craft, and I don't know how they do it, but as soon as you're on the craft in the hallway, something about who they are takes the fear away. Even though you're not totally comfortable, you know you're going to be taken back. And so it's okay for the time being. You know you're going to go through it, and you know you're going to be taken back. So I followed my guide, and we went around the corner, and everything is circular. And I felt, rather than saw, where this room was going to be. It was a force of some kind coming out of this room. And then when we walked in front of it, I felt it even stronger, and it was as if I was being punched by something I couldn't see. I could feel my muscles and my nerves reacting to it. And I continued on. I went into the room, and there was some sort of environment that I know was biological. I absolutely know it. There were fluids flowing in the floor. There were tubes going in and out of a structure that was enormous at the center, and there was some sort of enormous vial running up and down the center, and again, wires and tubes, and also a mechanical portion of it. And I felt the living portion of it, and I felt a connection with it, and it made me feel very emotional. And I also got some sort of message that this thing could communicate with every other central core on a craft that was just like this one, that they all knew where each one was.
Man.
And should they need to connect with, and I'm assuming a giant mothership, should they all need to do that, that they could and go there, that they could all meet, that they all knew what each other was doing. And at the same time, my nervous system was being pounded with this force to the point where Kathleen was noticing it. I was not aware of it at the time. But when she brought me out of hypnosis, she asked me if I was aware of the movement that my body was doing, and I said no. And I said, but I do have something going on with me physically that the neurologist cannot diagnose. nor can they treat it, nor can they calm it down with any kind of medication that we've tried. And I said, I want you to know that. So after a little while, I said, could we do this again and see if we can cause this action to come about and record it? And we did. And she has it on film, and she has my permission to show it. If anybody else is going through this and they have no idea what's going on, they now will realize what's causing it. There are certain places on Earth, if I go to visit it, I can feel this type of force similar, and I can't go near it. It's magnetic, I believe. Wow. So she now has a video of what happens.
And I want to add, just to give you an image of what Denise did go through, it appeared that she was being hit by pulses or waves, and that these, think of a baseball striking her in different, on different parts of her body, and her limbs would simply fly out, and it was very, very frightening for me to watch at first, as her body was hit by what appeared to be some kind of a force field. And, you know, I had to wonder, I tell you, even with this, if this was, you know, you might think that this is a crazy story, that this craft might be biological. And Denise didn't know any of this information at the time, but there were several other experiencers who have independently stated to me that they felt that the craft was biological. One of them said, quote, biological material is used deep within the energy system of a craft. Another wrote that these craft are living entities, much like bacteria. They live, breathe, function, and create. They are grown from what was initially a hybrid framework. The craft are generic, genetically modified structures. Not all craft have individual operators, but there are certain parts of their DNA replicated. Another said the craft seems to have its own intelligence. It can sense its surroundings. And this information was not publicized, and Denise was not aware of this information. So it came to me independently.
That is awesome. And one other aspect I thought was really interesting is it seems like in most of these cases, there is a guide. There's one particular gray that sticks with people throughout the experience. And if they experience any pain during the experimenting, they place their hands on the person's temples and the pain seems to subside.
Yes, that is correct. Every experiencer seems to have established a relationship with what I call an escort. My Aunt Betty Hill called him the leader when she was taken. But this is the person who communicates information to the experiencer, who stands by the experiencer while they're going through these experiments, sort of for emotional support. And when they do experience pain, if they do, it is this person who takes the pain away.
Man, that's an interesting aspect to the whole thing as well. You know, one thing I always love about these types of stories, is I'm really, really interested in the types of aliens that are experienced, or, you know, different, the idea of different races of aliens. I mean, that seems like so foreign. That kind of thing is so foreign. And these insectoid praying mantis type beings, I mean, there's a lot of people who describe them. I mean, you've in your research, have you found a lot of people that describe this being during the type of experience?
Yes, I do, absolutely. And it is very interesting that they appear to be working in concert with the grays. I am only aware of case after case where the grays and the insectoids are working together.
I've heard it suggested that the grays might actually be a form of artificial intelligence, like it's kind of the way the ship is. Has that come up at all?
It certainly has, and I'm going to ask Denise to talk to you about her opinion of the worker grays, those the guards, or what she calls the soldiers. But in terms of the taller ones, the doctors and the educators, the scientists, I kind of suspect that those might be sentient beings, because they do express some emotions, whereas the smaller ones do not. And they have been observed consuming food, you might say, an intake. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell how that is done, because that's part of our secret information. But they do behave as if they are alive. And Denise, would you like to explain your opinion of the shorter grays?
Yes, my opinion of this, I call them the soldiers. That's what I feel they are. And they are more robotic. They line the walls and they don't move, and there's no action from them at all until they're asked to or ordered to, or something triggers them. I think had I tried to escape or tried to run or make some movement that was against the wishes of the more human, I guess, if you want to say that, my guide and the doctor, then they would have moved to stop me. But other than that, they just stood there lining the walls in formation. And so those, I think, are more robotic or robots. And so my guide or escort has some human aspects. And I would have to say that it possibly is human. And the way that I would say that is because, or why I would say that is because, that and the doctor, the insectoid, studied me and looked at me and tried to understand why I was thinking or feeling certain things. It possibly had been bred out of them. They no longer felt things in the way that we do, and they would stare at me. They came awfully close to my face and looked at me like, why is she doing this? Why is she thinking that way? Why is she feeling this way? We don't understand. We possibly want that bread back into us. But they didn't even have the questions, the forethought to ask. They didn't have the words to put together. But I saw a confused look on their faces and a tilt of the head, a wondering type look, just confused as to why I was reacting a certain way. And I felt that, yes, those are, if you want to call them human, then that's what they were, beings.
Do you mean human or alive? Are you saying they're human beings or alive?
Alive.
Gotcha. Okay. Like humanoid.
A humanoid or, well, I don't know if you could use the word human. I don't know what the word is. I guess alive, a being.
Gotcha. Man, that is so interesting. Another aspect that I always am craving more information about is the information. It's like the communication between the two. I mean, there's really, it seems to be very vague and very short. But I guess there's a part of your hypnosis report where the entities, I suppose, are injecting something into your uterus, and I feel weird talking to you about your uterus, but that's what we're doing. So, you know, during part of it, you asked, am I carrying something? What am I carrying? And you got a response along the lines of, there are others that stay, look for the little, larger eyes, larger than yours, larger shaped eyes, and they're kinder than us, but you get to keep them. Can you shed some light on that? Is he talking about hybrids on the earth?
No, you know, I cannot get this out of my mind, and it's something I'm still looking for the answer for. There was a statement made, and it has to do with some mistakes that they make, because it said the ones that are mistakes, or the mistakes that we make, you get to keep, you get to raise them.
Wow. And I guess he described them as having slightly larger eyes.
Yes, slightly larger eyes. I was told you would know them, or you would recognize them if you think about it, because they have slightly larger eyes than yours. their heads come closer to ours than yours. I remember being told that. Sometimes I have little flashes of memory that come back, even now, that are clearer than even when we wrote the book. Things like that can come back. So I keep looking. I keep looking around at children, like, could that be one? Could this be one? And I was told also that they are extremely warm and loving children. And that's a part of their makeup. Well, who would they be? And why were they mistakes on the part of these beings?
Yeah.
I have yet to figure that out. I don't know. And those are the ones we get to keep and raise.
That sounds so crazy. You know, a long time ago, I heard one account where a woman said she was routinely brought back onto the craft to interact with, like, her hybrid baby, because a lot of them die without some loving contact from the mother, or maybe just any human woman. But it seems like that would sort of fit, because human babies kind of need love, and it seems like these beings are very cold. And so, I don't know, does that pop up often, a theme of women being brought aboard the craft just to interact with babies?
It's brought up over and over again among abduction experiencers, and not just the women, the fathers as well. Many men have reported this to me. And there were reports back in the very beginning when this process began, this hybridization process that has been reported by so many, that the children that they observed on the craft were really feral children. They did not know how to be human whatsoever. And it seems that it would be logical that the ETs would recognize this, and that humans can never be fully human unless they are socialized. And in order to do that, there has to be contact with other humans. But then you have to ask the question, what use is contact if it's happening once a month and not on a constant basis? But it appears that the humans have been attempting to teach the ETs and hybrids that have been raised on the craft to care for these little hybrid infants and children, so that they will behave as socialized beings.
Yeah, so strange.
It certainly is.
It's very, very odd. And you know how people who have lost their memory, that have amnesia due to accidents, due to things that their minds just can't wrap around here on Earth, that type of thing, I think, has happened when it comes to these abduction scenarios, because certain things have triggered my memory. One is a sound, and it has to do with an MRI machine. If I was in an MRI machine and some of the sound inside that machine caused me to recall a couple of things, and it's very odd, but it snapped me right back to what some of the entities looked like very clearly.
Man, you know, another thing you wrote about, I guess this was a person that Kathleen had worked with before, a woman named Jenny Anderson, I believe. She had some stuff that was really strange. Mainly the involvement of her husband. From the book, it was a bit hard to discern if she was paranoid or if her husband was almost acting as a handler for the ETs. I mean, is this unique to her case, or does this come up in other cases that you've studied?
This is not unique to Jenny's case. In fact, I didn't write anything in this book that was given to me for the first time. I had to have a collection of information that was identical to this from other experiencers. And I've spoken to hundreds of experiencers about this. It is quite common for the ETs to sometimes use a person as a handler. It might be a mother who is used in order to handle her children. that she appears to be cooperating with the extraterrestrials. And this happened in the case of Jenny's mother. But Jenny's mother felt that she was actually being used too, that the ETs were causing her to behave this way. And so with Jenny's husband, the same thing appeared to be occurring, that it wasn't his conscious decision, that the ETs were actually in charge. And we know that implants are placed within humans. And Denise even gave the information that I stated a few minutes ago, that this was a way of communicating with her and controlling her behavior.
Yeah, it's weird because you know, the experience with ETs would be so off-putting. It'd be hard to get someone to you know, to be a handler for someone that they're experimenting on. But I guess their technology is more powerful than the human mind. But I guess the thing that was the weirdest about her case is she said that she actually had an implant come out, like something came out of her nose, like a little seed-like thing, and her husband just took it and flushed it down the toilet. And that seems like the behavior, that seems like the perfect reason to have a handler, to destroy stuff like that. And it seems like the worst idea to do if you're really genuinely concerned about these experiences.
Yes, and I receive many, many reports of people who think that they've acquired physical evidence that might be tested in the laboratory, and for some reason they destroy this evidence.
Ah, that's. Have you ever seen an actual implant that's supposed to have come from someone? Has there ever been one that's escaped the protocols of destruction?
Well, I have seen the photographs of implants that were removed by Dr. Roger Lear and his team in California. He's a podiatrist, and he works with a material scientist to analyze the implants. And very, very fascinating discoveries made by Dr. Lear and Stephen Colburn, who is the scientist who is working on identifying these things. They appear to be nanotechnology. They have found meteoric material inside these implants, very highly unusual properties. The body doesn't reject them. There's a coating on the surface of them, and they connect to nerve endings. And sometimes it's difficult to remove them because when the surgical team attempts to extract it, it itself will move and start to travel up the person's body. Say if it's in the foot, it will start to try to travel up the leg. So it is it's often difficult to remove these.
Man, that is creepy stuff.
And then, Kathleen, if you recall, we just haven't found anybody to take a look for us. Out of two retired Coast Guard people, I have two implants removed from two separate people by a doctor, and I need to have someone that's able to look at them.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're both completely different. One was removed several years ago and looks like a little pod split in half. The other one looks more kind of plastic-like. They're two different colors, and it kind of looks like a little pod that contains something also. But we can't verify anything until we can get someone to look at it.
Man, now there's a lot of crazy stories out there about Eisenhower had met with Greys at one point, or that, you know, there's stories of the Dulce base where aliens are working with humans. Do you think this is something that our governments have any knowledge of, or do you think this is completely independent, if you can even speculate on that?
Well, I don't like to speculate. This is, I can say that it's very interesting and it could be possible, but I certainly cannot state whether or not these stories are true. How about you, Denise?
I have to agree. I have a lot of thought on the matter, and it just kind of bounces back and forth. Is it, isn't it, could it be? And that's just one of those things that we have no proof of. And you have to keep looking and searching and wondering, and maybe one day somebody will step forward and tell us exactly the way it is. But
Or produce evidence.
right.
Yeah. Well, Kathleen, with all the interviews and investigations you've conducted, can you tell us a little bit about the different types of entities you've heard about? It seems like most commonly there's small grays, one or two taller grays, and then insectoids. But are there other beings people have encountered?
Besides the hybrids, people have also reported reptilian type beings. That seems to occur more out on the West Coast and in the mountainous region of the United States, the mountain time zone. I don't know why that is, but I receive very few reports from the East Coast of this sort of thing. Also, people report perfectly human looking beings that they've observed on the craft, and don't know if they're humans, if this is what is called a MILAB abduction, MILAB, and they think that it might be some sort of military group or what it is. But there are also ones called the Nordics who are fairly tall and blonde or light brown hair, and they tend to be described as benevolent beings. I've received reports, but very, very tiny percentages of people have reported tall whites, tall goldens, hairy beings, short blue beings, so just a smattering, maybe 1% would report that type of thing. Most people report the grays or the insectoids, and then next in line is the reptilian type.
Man, can we talk about the reptilians a little bit? They have a huge place in the conspiracy world, thanks to David Icke and people like that who think that they are actually in charge of the planet. So it is interesting that on one hand, in a totally unrelated field, you have reports of reptilians, but then also people are getting pulled on crafts by reptilians. Do they have characteristics or anything that makes them different? Can you describe their personalities or their way about them?
Well, what is so perplexing to me about reptilians is that some people have given me very, very negative reports about very frightening experiences where they have been harmed or they have been raped, whereas other people have told me about the very kind and gentle reptilians. Who have appeared to them and just sort of materialized in front of them. So I don't know what this is all about. I know a lot about the grays, but not as much about these reptilian beings. It's interesting. I saw Daryl Sims over the weekend. I was speaking in Roswell, and he is a longtime abduction investigator from Houston, Texas. And his theory on all of this is that the grays have actually created insectoid type beings and reptilian type beings from animals on Earth through genetic experiments. So that was kind of interesting to think about as well. I really have no idea, and I consider myself to be a scientific ufologist, so I tend to follow the evidence and not to do a lot of speculating.
Of course. What I've heard them described as mostly is pretty negative, but I guess with any species, I mean, there's going to be good people and bad people, but humans are also weird in that they have the Stockholm syndrome type of thing. So you could have people that are identifying with them, even though they are negative, out of some kind of like want, I don't know, some type of weird desire to maybe fix them or just appreciate them. But it seems like the stories that I've heard with reptilian beings are more sexual, where the ones with the grays and insectoids seem to be about you know, the reproductive organs, but not necessarily sex itself. Have you heard a lot of accounts from reptilians that are sexual?
Yes, I absolutely have. And those accounts tend to be accounts of rape of humans, not consensual sex.
Man, that would be an off-putting experience for sure.
Yes, it certainly would.
There, also in the book, it's very quick, but you have mention of another person, Aubrey Hewen. She experienced like a worm-like creature.
Yes, you know, and that's something that I don't know if this is a figment of imagination or fantasy or if it is real, but I put it into the book in order to show that the variety of experiences here. So
yeah.
Interesting, but
kind of anomalous.
Reported only occasionally, not reported frequently.
Gotcha. Man, we're getting we've almost talked to her for an hour already, and there's so much interesting stuff here. I mean, I do want to hop back to Jenny Anderson for a minute because she said something that I thought was really interesting. She seemed to deduce that a lot of the paranormal activity is more related to ET science than ghosts and spirits. And she said that it seems like ETs were able to insert their consciousness into glowing balls of light. I'm sure she's just trying to make sense of what she's seen, but inserting their consciousness into glowing balls of light, I mean, it seems like that would increase their mobility. Also, it's less startling to humans. I thought that was really interesting. She also added that there seems to be an electromagnetism involved in their technology. So maybe when people see things fly off a shelf or doors close on their own, she thinks it could be related to the after effects of being near that technology. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
I absolutely do, because this was a question on the Marden-Stoner Commonality Study.
Oh, perfect.
Based upon information that I had received from Jenny. And 88% of the experiencers who participated in this study stated that they had had paranormal activity in their homes. And sometimes these were light orbs. It's fairly common for these little balls of light. In fact, I received a photograph from a man who is an abductee who was able to capture one of these. And there appears to be the face of a gray inside this orb.
Oh,
and people
wow.
report that sometimes they expand into full-size ETs just before an abduction occurs. And these paranormal events in people's homes seem to differ somewhat from what you think of as ghost-type activity, because I'm not hearing about cold spots and warm spots in the house and that sort of thing. I'm hearing more about things flying off shelves within a couple of days from the time that a person has been taken. And Denise and I have just recently made an important discovery, and I'm going to talk about it, but it needs a lot more research before I can generalize and state that this is true of experiencers. But Denise had an abduction experience in February, and I was using a meter to measure magnetic fields, electromagnetic fields, and then I switched it over to the electrical field reading. And we got an extremely high electrical field around Denise's body. In fact, when she walked toward it, when she was within 10 feet of it, it arced to full capacity. And we experimented with this to make sure that it was only Denise and not everyone that was doing this. And none of our controls caused this needle to spike, only Denise's body. And we've gotten the same type of reading on another experiencer, and this occurred immediately after an abduction. So I really need to do more research, but this is very interesting to me because it could explain the electromagnetic interference that's occurring in people's houses where appliances are burning out and lights are burning out and equipment is malfunctioning. as well as this poltergeist type activity. So,
yeah, I mean,
more research is needed.
As always, you know, but that, you know, that kind of stuff, that little section of Jenny's analysis kind of struck a chord with me, because I'm always looking for, and I'm sure most people are in this field, some type of unified theory of like how these things are all related or if they're related. But, you know, she did say that the transportation process from, you know, ground to craft seemed to have something to do with raising the vibrational frequency of someone, which is kind of in line with what a lot of mystics and New Age people believe, that there's some type of ascension or light body that's attainable with one when one raises their consciousness. And, you know, that stuff is all kind of vague. But in this context, I felt like it seemed like it made sense, like there might be some type of ability that humans have. That we don't even know about, that we haven't unlocked or tapped into, but maybe the Greys can do it, and they can induce it in us for travel.
And you know, I wasn't really talking about anything New Agey at all. I was talking about theoretical physics here, and we theorize that nothing is absolutely solid, that everything is in motion.
True.
And that a solid object such as a rock or a wall will vibrate at a lower frequency than, say, the human body. And I talked to some theoretical physicists about this, and what I was told is that it is possible, theoretically, if we were to match up frequency and phase of the human and the solid object, then it would be possible to pass matter through matter, because 99% of the atom is empty space between the protons and electrons. So I was even told that it has been done on a very small scale in a laboratory. So this is very interesting to me as well.
Yeah, we're catching up.
Yeah, but there are so many things that are associated with this. We're trying to discover what this is all about. Then we're finding out there's possibly a sound associated with this. And if so, how many hear it? And what does it sound like? This can go on and on. So many questions.
Yeah, I mean, and to try to broaden this out before we go, We talked about the studies you've done of the analysis of many other people, the commonalities among abduction experiences study. And can you point out some of the things that have happened, that like some of the results you found from there? Because like you said, 88% have paranormal activity in their homes. What are some of the other things that were common amongst the group?
Well, we found that 88% stated that their abduction memories were consciously recalled. 67% saw a craft at less than 1,000 feet before they were taken. 56% stated that they consciously recalled non-human entities immediately prior to the abduction when they were outside their homes. 76% stated that they were not alone when they were taken. 62% said they had conscious recall for at least part of their experience. 43% stated that witnesses reported the observation of a UFO near their house, vehicle, or tent prior to or during an abduction. 58% stated that they were aware of having been examined on a craft. Most do wake up with unexplainable wounds or black and blue marks on their bodies, sometimes in the shape of three long fingerprints, for example, or triangular-shaped pieces of skin that appear to be removed, or scoop marks where a little piece of skin is cored out. We also discovered that there is a much higher rate of migraine headaches and chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome among experiencers than in the general public, and that nearly 75% of experiencers lie awake at night, fearful that they might be taken, and that this has a big impact upon them. And it's something that we're attempting to work on. You can imagine being awake until 4 o'clock in the morning, sleeping for 2 hours, and then going to work the next day. So That is something that really concerns us. Another weird one is that a high percentage said that they crave salt. And that was a big surprise to me.
Yeah.
72% said that they are more sensitive or intuitive than they were before they had these experiences and have become more psychic.
Man, one of the other weird ones that I saw in there was that 50% say to have experienced some type of healing abilities, and Denise apparently had this for a short time with animals. Can you shed some light on that at all, or elaborate on that?
Yes, I did, and it appeared to be for a brief time in Florida, but then in Colorado, I had a couple of animals that... I was working again with Dr. Romack, and we attended a church that had some hands-on healing, and people also brought their animals on a certain night. And there was one individual who had a dog that couldn't diagnose the problem, and the poor animal was, you could tell, in pain and discomfort. It could have been a type of arthritis. I mean, the poor guy was just miserable. And I was able to do a hands-on healing myself. And the dog got well and never had that reoccur. Was
wow.
able to go and chase and play with a ball, play with a frisbee, jump in the air. The vet could not explain what had happened and why he was well. And went on from there to live a long life because we traced it and checked on it. And a couple of other occasions, one with a cat and another dog.
Wow. I mean, do you consider yourself lucky, Denise? I know this has got to be scary at times, but I mean, do you feel like you're lucky in a sense that you have some insight into reality that other people might not get?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. It's something that I feel is another attachment to the universe and maybe to secrets that others don't have, or just a tiny, tiny opening, a glimpse at something that we all want to know. It makes me want to know more, and absolutely, it's special.
Oh, man, is there any way to signal that you want to be taken? Because I'm ready, and I'll be very easy to deal with. I'll be very cool. If you see them, if you get abducted, let them know that I'm ready.
Be very careful what you wish for.
Man. So, I mean, well, to wrap this up, what conclusion, if any, can be gathered from these experiences? I mean, it seems obvious that there's a hybridization program going on. It almost seems as if maybe they're covertly trying to contaminate our gene pool to include a bit more of them and their nature. Or maybe it is for our own good, because humans have some pretty negative tendencies. We're destroying the planet and killing each other, which I've also heard gets brought up in some contact experiences. But on the other hand, I mean, it seems like most of the hybrids stay with them, so I don't know.
Well, I'm wondering if we actually have a symbiotic relationship, and they are obtaining genetic material from us and for their own benefit, but that they are also helping us to perhaps move forward, I guess, in our growth and development to someday reach a level of maturity where we might be able to join the cosmic neighborhood.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, thanks so much, ladies. I mean, I really love digging into your work and the conversation we've had. Is there anything else you'd like to leave the audience with before we go? Maybe your websites?
Yes, absolutely. My website is Kathleen, with a K, dash Marden, MARDEN.com. You can read my commonalities report there, along with a number of other articles. You can read where I'm going to be lecturing this year, and you can also purchase any of my books from that website using a credit card. And Denise, why don't you go ahead?
Yes, I have Denise, M as in Margaret, Stoner.com is my website, and you can purchase our book there also if you want an autographed copy, and also our brand new commonality study questionnaire is there, both of our websites. If you would please, please, please go in and fill that out, because we need to have the answers to more questions to help not just us, the scientific group, and yourselves out once we get these responded to.
Very cool. Kathleen, Denise, it's been a real pleasure. I'm fascinated with the subject. I hope we've given a bit of credibility to the alien abduction phenomenon for those who may doubt it. And hopefully, you know, someday we'll get a smoking gun.
I hope so.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thanks again. And, you know, hopefully we can do this again sometime if there's any other huge revelations in the research.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
All right, ladies, have a good day.
Thanks for having us on. Bye-bye.
Thanks. There we go, people. Hope you enjoyed it. I definitely did. Remember ParanoiaCon this weekend in San Diego, July 20th and 21st. And if you like comics, I can think of none better to recommend than mindcomics.com. And last and quite possibly least is my very own special brand of t-shirts at conspiratees.net. Thanks for listening. Please keep us in the Rolodex and review us where you can. Keep your pimp hand strong and your head above water. It's crazy out there.